Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to a Friday. Colton Stone, Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt out for juniors baseball. He's up in Omaha. He's got that for a couple more days, so tomorrow will also be no Chris Schmidt, me and Mark Kranak. You can tap the line, Chilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Let's do that. 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Danny's finally back from, I guess, a vacation. He just wanted to ditch us, so, and celebrated a birthday. 22. Okay, yep. So Schmidt and I weren't sure what the number was. I know you graduated, not a college student anymore, but I wasn't sure on the number. So, you know, how was your trip? It's glad to have you back. And how was the birthday? We our over under on blacking out was after Hail Varsity got done.
So no, the trip was good. I flew back home, stayed there over the 4th, went to a friend's lake house, and then from there, my parents picked me up and we went to our lake house, which is in northern Wisconsin. I was talking about in the show last week, which is in Eagle River. So did a lot of fishing, a lot of hanging in the lake, got really burnt the first day. So that kind of put me out of commission a little bit, but you know, toughed it out, of course, had to enjoy it, but no, it was a good time. Then I came back, celebrated my birthday at home with some friends, and no, I was not blackout by the time the show was gone or done during.
Okay, but
before.
What about by the end of the day?
I didn't get too bad. Okay. You know, I had a big birthday meal before, so I was, like, pretty full. But, no, we still had a good time. Still felt a little crappy the next morning. But, no, a bunch of people came out, so it was a good time. And, no, we hung around my area. We went to our friend's apartment and just went to some bars down there and whatnot. So, yeah, okay. It was a good time.
Well, we're glad you made it back alive.
Yeah, as am I.
And in one piece. And, you know, finally back in the studio. So it's good to have you back. You know, you flew there, right?
Yep.
How was the flight back?
It was good. The flight there, it kept getting delayed, so that kind of sucked. But on the way back, it was all good. We actually got there early. My buddy one time going out of Lincoln said his flight got delayed like, I don't know, 4 hours or something. He was just waiting to go home for Thanksgiving. The flight was maybe at like 2 or 3 and didn't leave till later in the night. And I was afraid that was going to happen because they delayed it like the night before I even was going to the airport. But, you know, it wasn't too bad.
Funny story about Chicago airports, then we'll get into football, I guess. Not to get too far off. When I came back from, I was at a sports camp in New York my freshman year, like after freshman year. And so I was up in Albany, and the flight was from Albany to Chicago back to Omaha. And ours got delayed. The flight was supposed to be at like noon maybe or 2, somewhere around there. And it got delayed like 3 hours. So I'm like stressing that I haven't been home for 2.5 months. Like I'm stressing I'm not going to make it home like in time. Well, it's because the flight that we were getting on was taking so long to get back from Pittsburgh or wherever it was. But there was like rainstorms everywhere. So everywhere was delayed. So by the time I'm in like sandals, like athletic slides running through, I think I was at O'Hare, just like running through, or maybe it's Midway, but I'm just like running down this hall just to see like if I'm, you know, it's delayed, late, whatever. I finally get there and they're delayed like 40 minutes because we're just sitting like on like a runway waiting. I was like, I need to get on the next one, please. Like, let me get out of this place. And the guy next to me was like in the same boat. He was going somewhere else. And he's like, dude, I got to get off this plane. And he's like, I don't want to have to stay here. He's like, I don't want to, I haven't seen my family for 2 months. Like, yeah, I'd like rough. To leave too. But yeah, no, delays are never good. So coming up in about, we'll say an hour, Derek Peterson, Hail Varsity Radio. We'll have him on. We'll talk a little bit college football, talk the mailbag and hit on some stuff. And we will also have our rewind. Yesterday was a whole best of show. One of them I wanted to get to, but didn't get the chance to. Filled segments with other stuff. But we, back in June, the program was with Nebraska. And I guess they'd come in a few times, the military training. So Jeremiah Searles had a good story about Jake Cotton, and then he phoned in. So we've got the rewind with them, kind of detailing what the the E Hollywood True Story pool incident was when the program visited during the Pelini era. So, but I'll start here. We talked about odds earlier this week about, you know, who might win the Big Ten, and we'll get into that a little bit too. As I know you like to bet, Danny, so we'll try to see where our sure bet is. And we agreed that Ohio State probably is, but at the same time, like, you've got to bet more money to win money, so it's not not necessarily the most financially smart decision, but at the same time, you probably won't lose money either. Mm-hmm. But odds I want to start with is Caesars Entertainment came out with their odds to win the 2018 Heisman Trophy. Now, it sounds like, you know, why should we care? Well, originally I didn't think we would, but this list has two Huskers on it. One of them doesn't surprise me. The other one does, and the name that's left off is what surprised me the most. But you know, going through this list, it's pretty, you know, Tua is at 4-1. That's, you know, reasonable. Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin's at 9-1. Khalil Tate, Arizona's at 15-1. You know, you go through the list. Bryce Love 4-1. And so the list isn't Will Greer 18-1. So it's not a bunch of names that are nobodies. I mean, it's a big list of guys that could or should have a good shot at it as the season goes through. But the one that jumps out at 80-1, you've got Adrian Martinez. First of all, like, you don't even know if he's a starter, and he hasn't played, you know, contact football for 15 months now, something like that. So, I mean, that's like a big ask. And then on top of that, a quarterback that you do know is playing is Alex Hornibrook in the Big Ten, and he's at 100-1. So you've got Adrian Martinez, who's already got better odds than an established quarterback in the Big Ten. So
I didn't even notice the Hornibrook one.
No, I didn't either. But I mean, it's probably just a, hey, let's throw one more guy on this list, because, I mean, he's pretty far down there. But, I mean, a guy, and then the one that I was surprised by is J.D. Spielman at 85-1. And I think I'm not surprised that there's a Husker on there. I mean, that's fair. They see what Frost did with UCF. And think, oh, well, you know, if it's implemented correctly, they've got the talent to do so. But what surprised me is that I was looking so hard for it, and maybe I keep going over. There's no Stanley Morgan on there.
Right.
And if you're going to put J.D. Spielman on there, who had like half the yards, well, not half, but close to half the yards that, you know, that Morgan had, why isn't Stanley on there? And I don't know, you know, I don't know who made this list. I don't know what goes into it, but I don't know. I'm more surprised that Stanley Morgan's on there, not on there, than a Husker being on that list.
Yeah, it is shocking that he's not on there. I'm sure you could still find his odds somewhere if it's not even on the sheet. I'm sure you'd be able to. But it's weird that they would broadcast J.D. Spielman on there over Stanley Morgan. I don't know. Maybe they know. It's not even they know something. I mean, we don't really know anything, but maybe they're assuming that J.D. Spielman will thrive a little bit better in this offense than Stanley Morgan for some reason. Maybe they think because it's Stanley's final year compared to J.D.'s second year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe some logistics go into that. I don't really understand why they would have him over there, but Adrian Martinez, that's pretty crazy too. I mean, we keep seeing stuff about him popping up, pretty much assuming he's a starter, but we haven't heard anything. We are just assuming like everyone else. But yeah, for Huskers, I don't know. I mean, Adrian Martinez isn't that shocking. J.D. Spielman, if he was on there, I'd be like, eh, that's cool, okay. But yeah, Stanley Morgan off of it, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, so, you know, Schmidt and I were talking about this. Like, how many yards do we think Stanley could end up with? You know, he almost had 1,000 last year. This is an offense where a guy like him should be the dominant receiver. Mm-hmm. He is a bigger body. He's more experienced. And he's still got all the same skill set of being fast, being, you know, this versatile like receiver. But at the same time, I just to be devil's advocate, I brought up the fact that this is an offense that moves at such a tempo and needs to be able to change the scheme as it's going so often that you have to have 6, 7, 8 options at any time, you know, to just throw out there. So the thing I think that hurts but also helps Stanley is the fact that you've got so many options. You can go to J.D. Spielman. You can go to Tyjon Lindsey. You know, you've got all these new receivers that are coming in. And then you have the options out of the backfield. You have the options of the quarterback running the ball. So then it's just, does it become, you know, he shines so much that he does, like, play a big role? Or is there so many working parts going that no one shines through this offense?
Yeah, that's, I was saying the same thing when we were talking about Stanley Morgan being ranked a top 50 player in Sports Illustrated, I believe, a couple weeks ago. And I was saying, you know, maybe the one reason he wouldn't be a top 25 player, the one reason he'd just be pushed to the side a little bit, is just because of this offense using so many different players and having so many different threats. Will that hurt him? Schmitty made the point, you know, I don't think it's going to be quantity. I think it's going to be quality, him finding the ball in the end zone more so than just getting pass after pass after pass, and how it was last year where it was, you know, we're screwed, just throw it up, Stanley will make a great play, right, kind of type deal. But it's still just as kind of weird, even with that thought in mind, why they would have J.D. Spielman over him. Not to knock J.D. Spielman by any means. He's a fantastic receiver. But the first person that comes to mind is Stanley Morgan. So I don't know what their thinking process on that is. They must either just put him on there for some reason to switch it up, or they really think he's going to thrive a little bit better in this offense.
Now, I could see them looking at it as...
Well, they also might use J.D. Spielman backfield wise more too.
Okay, I had two avenues. I was going to go with, yeah, there is, you know, they have him at a receiver, but does he become the DeMornay Pearsonell of, right, of this offense? Does he become the, you know, guy that can come out of the slot but jet sweeps? Will he be a punt returner? Will, mm-hmm, he be a kick returner? Like, will he be almost, you know, this is not a comparison by any means, but almost the, like, Christian McCaffrey, how he, it, you know, it wasn't one thing that he did. It was that if he's on the field, you better know where he's at, mm-hmm, because he's an all-purpose guy. I think that could be what Spielman develops into. Will he be that in his second year? I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, you look at Pearsonell, he had a great freshman year, and then he got dinged up, and it kind of went downhill.
Right.
And not to knock DPE by any means, because he still was, you know, serviceable, but it's kind of a what could have been, right? So Spielman had a really good freshman year, but, you know, if he has a leg injury or some kind of injury that you know, puts a damper on his season, could it be the same scenario? I think we're reading a lot into it. I think that, you know, we want to make it something that it's not. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I don't know. It almost feels, and like you said, you could probably find the odds somewhere, but it almost feels like a kind of a disrespect to Stan.
Yeah,
personally.
For sure. And now I want to go a little bit into the other players. I said after the national championship, you know, book it to a Heisman, kind of like a lot of other people joking, but kind of serious at the same time. I'm still going to stick with him number one just because I'm sticking by my guns from what I tweeted out. But I think a dark horse, not too much of a dark horse because his odds aren't terrible, at 20-1, J.K. Dobbins. Ohio State running back.
Okay.
Dude was a stud against Nebraska. Of course, all of Ohio State were studs against Nebraska.
Everyone was a stud against Nebraska.
I was like calling that game, and just getting to see him run was really cool, and he has a lot of potential. I think he could break out this year for sure, and I think 20-1 odds are pretty solid for him, and I'd put a couple bucks on that for sure.
Yeah, and I was kind of looking through to, you know, see what other guys, as like we said, Adrian Martinez is on there. What other kind of guys are on there? You've got Shea Patterson as a Big Ten quarterback, Trace McSorley, Brian
Both
Lewarke.
20-1.
Yeah, Brian Lewarke is a 50-1.
Bryce Love, 4-1.
Dwayne Haskins is a 20-1. So, like, some of these guys haven't even played, you know, at their respective school for their respective position.
Like, Jalen Hurts is on there, 80-1. Like, yeah, they got two quarterbacks from Alabama.
Yeah, you don't even know who's going to be. I mean, it's probably going to be Tua. I think we can say that. But at the same time, I mean, they were kind of interchangeable the last season anyways.
Mackenzie Milton on there, 60-1.
Yeah, I saw that one. And I don't know. And maybe that's why Martinez is on there. Maybe it's Milton's on here because of what he did last season. Martinez is on here because of what Milton did last season. Because if he, you know, fills the same role, essentially that's the goal, right? Is you see what UCF did, and it's plug and play. You hope that you have better talent because it's Nebraska, and you just cross your fingers and hope that it's the exact same product that comes out on the field. And I think they've got very similar like pieces. And I think if Martinez is 100% healthy, if he's the guy that goes, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a Heisman, you know, in the Heisman race year one, but could he build that portfolio up? Sure. But what if game one Akron rolls out and it's Jebbia? Well, and this thing just goes to hell right away, right?
Well, here's the real reason he's on there is what I'm assuming. A lot of Nebraska fans saw Scott Frost, what he did to Mackenzie Milton. Like you said, everyone loved it. Scott Frost coming home. Everyone's excited, so pumped. Adrian Martinez, a lot of talk about him being the starter. They put that on the sheet. Some Nebraska fan rolls into Vegas. Hey, you know, I'm going to throw however much money on Adrian Martinez.
Oh, yeah.
Just rack up a little bit of dough just because, oh, that'll be fun. New offense, new quarterback. This should be fun. It's the real reason they have him on there right now.
Oh, no. I mean, that's why, you know, more than half of these guys are on this list, right? You can only pick out about 10 that you could legitimately say, like, yeah, they have a chance at winning this thing. It's such a big list that, you know, most of these guys won't be even in the talks by the end of the year. But it's fun to see, you know, maybe they do get some kind of national hype. This is a good start, I think.
Absolutely.
So I think you're right, though. I think it's just a way to make money off guys that are willing to throw $1,000, whether they light it on fire or not. So we'll talk a little bit more odds in the Big Ten as we continue Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Hail Varsity Radio continues on a Friday. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. You can find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. Derek Peterson about 50 minutes away. We'll catch up with him. And as continuing the odds here, want to move away from the Heisman. We don't want to stay on it too long. I know we probably already did, and we're probably reading way too much into it. But, you know, I'd throw $100 on Adrian Martinez if I had $100 to burn. I don't think that's
I wouldn't.
I will use $100.
I will take that
Danny's
bet with
money.
You right now. You
no,
can give me
no,
that
I'm okay.
$100 on
no,
Adrian.
It's fine.
I'll gladly take that.
Yeah,
bet
I'll give you $1. That's why don't here. We'll set up our own Tiger Phil $10 million match. It'll
there
be $10. We'll just play for $10. Like
we should just make a bracket. We get like a certain amount of players each, and kind of you know do a little pool who ends up in the finals and whatnot. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, you know we've got plenty of time before the season starts, right? Yeah, we'll get it. So. Well, Schmidt and I talked about this on Monday. They came out with the odds for who could win the Big Ten, and it was the whole thing. And we did sure bet, long shot, dark horse, not with Danny's money. And some of them on there, they're like, what, 800 to 1 or 8,000 to 1, whatever it is. Like
for Big Ten, no, 800, yeah, was the highest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were going through it, and it's just like some of those teams, they have no chance. Like, they just don't. Like, Rutgers and Illinois. No
Rutgers
chance.
And Illinois, yep. They were both 800 to 1.
Yeah. So, but we were going through it, and my sure bet, and I hated to do it, but my sure bet was Ohio State. You aren't really going to win any money off of it, but you're going to be right, probably. Like, that's just, if you had to look at recent years, like, why wouldn't you pick Ohio State to come out of the East? You know? Like, I see many scenarios where they don't come out of the East because if Penn State is as good as they can be or Michigan State, you know, pulls something out. But I just don't see a scenario where Ohio State's not representing the Big Ten East.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll give you the odds here for the Big Ten championship odds via Bovada. Ohio State 3-2, Wisconsin 14-5, Michigan 11-2, Penn State 6-1, Michigan State 10-1, Iowa 40-1, Nebraska 40-1, Northwestern 50-1. Purdue 80-1, 90-1 is Minnesota, 250-1 is both Maryland and Indiana, and then we said Illinois Rutgers 800-1. So for me, the sure bet, of course, Ohio State. If I'm putting a good amount of money and I'm putting my reputation on the line, sure, of course, I'm going to say Ohio State. A team that I think I can get good value on, and that's I don't want to say underrated, but just has good value on it, like I said, and has a good chance of actually doing it, I kind of want to put it on Michigan State.
Okay.
They were impressive last year, and they're always, I don't want to say overlooked, but just a little bit under the radar. You don't really hear too much about them in the offseason necessarily.
Yeah, I feel like kind of what happens with Michigan State is, you know, other than the year, what, they went like 3-9 and then won 10, they had 10 wins. Mm-hmm. So they, what generally happens is, you know, they're going to be a competitive, good football team, and then one or two losses kind of derails them, and then you don't really hear from them for a while. But it, we're 2 years removed, I guess three if you count 2018 to 2015, but we're just two seasons removed from them winning the Big Ten championship. Like, they beat an undefeated Iowa. Mm-hmm. Now, was it close or controversial or whatever? Sure, fine. But no one was upset that 12-0 Iowa got beat by Michigan State. So, no, I thought Michigan State was – they're not a long shot by any means, but, like, yeah, they're – I think you get – I just think they – you get good value right. off of it.
Yeah, I don't think it would be – if you told me you did that, I wouldn't say that's a dumb bet, depending right. on how much you threw, of course. But yeah. I don't – if you told me
my
that –
my entire
be,
house.
And I saw 10-1, I'd say, okay, you know, that's not bad. Throw 10 bucks, you know, whatever. But, yeah, otherwise, besides that, I guess Wisconsin – I don't know. That's kind of tough. I don't think it'd be Michigan. I think it'd be Penn State or Wisconsin is who it would come down to for my yeah. next pick for sure. But, yeah, and then they also – we have the odds for winning the Big Ten West and Big Ten East. We'll start with the Big Ten West. Wisconsin coming in at 4-9 odds, heavily favored there. Then Nebraska and Iowa both coming in at 10-1 odds, Northwestern 11-1, Minnesota 14-1, as well as Purdue, and then Illinois 100-1.
Give me Illinois. Give me the Illini. Obviously, like, yeah, depending on how much money you're putting in, the value's not there, but Wisconsin will probably win the West. Now, my counterpoint to that is my dark horse for the whole Big Ten being at 40-1 was Iowa. Like, I think they're – or not dark horse, long shot. Just because they're in a spot where – they were good last year, and they're returning a lot. And I think they're kind of like Michigan State, where they're either going to be really good or you just won't hear from them at all. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's one of the two. And I always hate admitting that Iowa can be good at football. But, again, we're 2 years removed from them being a 12-0. I mean, they got absolutely demolished by Christian McCaffrey and company. But I think that I'd love to put money on Nebraska. I would. But – I don't think it gets done unless they beat Wisconsin. Nebraska's not winning the Big Ten West. That's how I view it.
Right. And I think I would say Nebraska too, besides Wisconsin, of course, just because I think Nebraska would be the next team in line to actually have a legitimate chance. The only thing that does hold me back is just the toughness of the schedule.
Oh, yeah.
More so than it being Frost's first year. I think it just comes down to the toughness of the schedule for me.
Well, and what happens too, and you know, Jerry DiNardo's talked about this, how they should do, you win your division if you have the best record in your division. Because what's going to happen is, look at Nebraska's crossover. They've got Michigan State, mm-hmm. Michigan, and Ohio State. Great for if you're going to go 12-0. Terrible if you're trying to win 9 games. Because you lose those 3, and then you've only got 9 more games.
Right.
You got to win out, and you've got to play Wisconsin, and you've got to play Iowa, both on the road, by the way, as well as Michigan and Ohio State on the road. So, like, you don't have much room for error, like, for any of them. And Wisconsin, I don't think they have a cupcake for a schedule by any means, but I know last year they went undefeated, and because they didn't have a tough schedule, they, you know, they lost and they were out of the playoff. But, again, them being one win removed from being in a playoff, like, I don't know how you don't see them winning, but Nebraska and Iowa, are very comparable. Nebraska having all this talent and potential, Iowa being established and knowing what they did last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
give me Northwestern.
I still am on board. Like, I think people overlook Northwestern a little bit, and almost seem like I'm coming off as a Northwestern fan every time I say it, because I've said it so many times. I keep saying, look out for that Northwestern-Nebraska game. Northwestern's a tough school, man. I mean,
I think
every time the Huskers have played them, it's been a battle.
Well, and here's the thing with that.
That I've seen, at least.
Is whoever's on the road wins that game. Nebraska just happens to be on the road this year.
That's true.
So that's probably what's going to happen. But The weird thing with Northwestern is I think I picked them as my long shot because their odds aren't great, but at the same time,
yeah,
like,
they're 11-1, not terrible. It's good value.
Well, for the whole Big Ten.
Oh, for the whole Big Ten, yeah, they are 50-1. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like terrible, but at the same time, like, I'm not going to go throw a bunch of money on it either, right? No. But I think that, yeah, they get overlooked. They've got talent. They aren't a bad football team. Pat right. Fitzgerald's a really good head coach too. So like they've always had the ability and the talent there. It's just never really come to full fruition since the Big Ten has become a 14-team league.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We'll definitely talk more about it as the summer progresses and we get more updates on injuries, depth charts, and everything surrounding that. But and then kind of transitioning a little bit here, you want to talk a little bit about the news of Willie Canty and everything surrounding that. So I know you're a little, you're a little fumed up about that before the show. So let's hear your take on it.
I don't want to say, like, yeah, I'm ready to throw this microphone through that piece of glass or anything by any means, but I'm kind of just overseeing people that are like, well, we need to get some 4 and 5 stars at Nebraska. Like, that's what they really need to focus on. We need to stop getting, like, 3 stars or getting guys that need to develop. And Willie Canty, I mean, he's, as I'm literally reading right here, 6'6", almost 300 pounds. Like, he's a big guy. He would be awesome in that offense, but he's choosing to enroll at a community college, which that's totally fine. Like, think about how many, you know, Huskers have thrived as JUCO, and think of how many haven't. Like, there's a pretty like balanced amount, and Garden City is one of the better community colleges are around, and so.
And they say he's going to mostly take care of his academics, get things in order, just get the flow of things
and
going.
See, and I don't see why that's wrong. I don't see why people can go and say, like, oh, well, we don't need these guys that are going to keep going to community colleges. It's like, okay, the difference is you either, you know, take a year or two at a community college and get used to being away from home, college work, and playing football. Or it's like, hey, you're playing at the highest level at one of the most renowned football programs. Oh, by the way, you also need this many hours, this many, you know, here's how long practice is, here's how many times you've got to be involved. Like, it's a lot. Like, it is a lot. And I think people overlook that part. And they're just thinking that, oh, 4 and 5 are going to, 5 stars are going to come in. No, it's going to be the exact same situation. Yeah. Like, will they be maybe a little more prepared? Sure. But they're still going to get developed. They're still not going to come in and be ready. Like,
right.
Look how that worked out in the past 3 years. It was all 4 and 5 stars, and they went 4 and 8 last year.
Right. Well, I get the two sides of the story is he could come to Nebraska, redshirt, try to get everything in order, do the same thing, you know, adjust to being away from home, whatnot, get used to the schedule. But the thing is, well, let me say first, and then compared to community college, you kind of get the same thing. He gets to play, not as competitive and stressful right. and so much heat on him. But the thing that makes it so much bigger of a difference now, too, is the new rule allowing those redshirt players to play up to 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I could understand if you're a little frustrated, maybe just asking yourself why, because mm-hmm. you always have a little fear in you that he might not come back to Nebraska going to community college. So I think you could be a little curious and just, what the heck, man? Like, what are you doing? You could still have the opportunity to play here and really get the understanding of it. But there's so many other things that go into it. I get the more small school feel, so it does make sense on that scale as well.
And I totally agree with that, I guess. Like I said earlier in the show, just to be kind of devil's advocate about it, it's yes, you've got that redshirt rule where you can play in 4 games, but I think that benefits guys more like Adrian Martinez or quarterbacks or, you know, position players.
Yeah.
Because, you know, an offensive line, you need guys that are going to have chemistry together, that work really well together, that like can stay healthy, and they've got a group of experienced linemen. And so it's not like he was probably even going to get – the games he would have got in were like Akron and Troy more than likely. And who knows if those are going to be close games or difficult games. So we'll like find out. But I think developing is more important than how many stars next to the guy's name. We'll talk a little more about coaches and college football as we continue on Hail Varsity.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. Tap the line, Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Let's do that. 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Hot seat coaches, Danny. We talked about this earlier this week while you were still out, and we didn't really get to it too much. CBS came out with their list, and we kind of got into it, but we really focused on probably like three or four guys. We think Coach O down at LSU is probably he's not close to being gone, I don't think, but he's got to do something down there because as I told Schmidt, LSU's been they're stuck ever since that 2007 season. They've just been kind of just the same thing. Like, they haven't had a good quarterback. They've had a fine running game. Their defense has been LSU defense, but outside of that, like, nothing's been really dynamic. And this is a college football like scene that is becoming spread offenses and RPO, and you know it's not going to work if you don't change. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of why we went there. Lovie Smith's a given, I think. I think that
So, well, let's go over the reins really quick. So they have zero through five, zero being untouchable, five being winner be fired, four start improving now, three pressures mounting, two all good for now, one safe and secure, six coaches winner be fired, 11 untouchable. What do you have Lovie Smith at, you personally?
Well, I think he's either four or five in here.
Yeah.
I unless Illinois goes 12-0, I don't think he's there next year. I honestly think...
Yeah, they have him at a five. So.
And I think that's the same thing with Chris Ash at Rutgers, because like I was telling you, you know, before we got on air, Rutgers a few years ago, I say a few, it's probably about a decade ago, like when Ray Rice was there and they were rocking, like Rutgers was a team you had to worry about when the Big East was like a big deal, and they also haven't been anything since. So like I don't see how either of those schools have their head coach next year.
Thing is, I just don't know who Illinois would go after better than Lovie Smith, you know? That's a little biased, too, because he took my Bears to the Super Bowl. I mean, he has been doing great for recruiting so far, but we'll see this year. I would put him more toward four. I guess you could have put him at that last year, though, start improving now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's Illinois, too.
That's why I think they may give him at least one more year after assuming they're going to have a losing record this year.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if he I say they have to go undefeated. If they went like 7-5, or, you know, made it 6-6, made it to a bowl game, won a bowl game,
500 or above, I think he's definitely okay.
Gets one more. After that, if it's not much better than 500, I don't see them keeping him much longer.
And then what about your boy Herm Edwards? He's at three. Pressure is mounting already.
Yeah. Yeah, he should be at a five. No, here's... I know I've probably, like, stressed my feelings about this more than a few times. But, one, the reason I'm ticked is the fact that cross-state rival Arizona got the guy I wanted at Arizona State and Kevin Sumlin. And two, I think the reason he's at a three is the fact that the fan base is also ticked off. I don't think they, you know, Herm got hired because the president at Arizona State had a connection with Herm Edwards. Like, that's what it was. And so he's there. And if they win the Pac-12, all aboard. I'll get on the Herm train. That's fine. But I don't know. They had a tough time last year with their schedule, and it's essentially the same thing this year. I don't know how that's going to go.
I just think he's at three because he's such a loose cannon, dude. Like, the stuff he says, like, he hasn't been coaching in a while. He didn't know their name, like their full name. I can't see him being like, he's got to be one of the most interesting recruiters sitting down at your table. Just imagine Herm Edwards looking at you trying to relate with a 16 to 18 year old kid.
He's even admitted that like he didn't like know like not how to recruit, but he'd like it's just like, oh, it's like a very different process. Like, yeah, it is. They don't come to you. You go to them.
Right. Like, he's definitely given the old military dad kind of attitude to it. Like, you know, we're going to shape you up. We're going to do this, that, and that. Like, yeah, we'll have fun too. But he's not saying that part.
I was going to say, think about it this way. If you want to compare it to Nebraska football, think about it. Riley ran a very like hands-off, like pro style program.
Mm-hmm.
And
very like soft on the kids. Like,
yeah,
hey,
they're like, hey, just be back in your room by midnight.
Very
you
friendly.
Know, don't have to eat together. Like, you all can handle your own stuff.
Yep,
you don't need to make sure you do your
homework. Herm's on the complete opposite spectrum of that.
I think he's like a mix of it. I think he's like fully hands-on, but it's also like, we're going to treat you like adults at the same time too, though. Like, I don't think he's going to sit there and like, I mean, he's going to scream at them. I mean, that's fine. That's good. But I don't know. Three's fine. I think that's about right. That's fair.
I guess. I mean, for first year, it's just kind of, it's pretty funny. Pressure.
Oh, go ahead.
Because it's pressure mounting is what they have for three, but then below, all good for now. So how many years do you see them having Herm there then if the pressure is mounting and they go maybe a little over 500? How many more years do you give him?
To be honest, I don't give him more than 3 to 5. Like, I just...
The pressure is mounting now? I don't know. I would just say first year, you got to think he's all good for now. Second year, pressure is mounting. But like he said, he's a loose cannon, so... I don't know. There's always pressure on a loose cannon.
I don't know what's
going to
happen with that. Well, here's one of the other ones we kind of hit on. You look at a program. I feel bad for anyone that, you know, touches that program with a 10-foot pole, but Kansas, their coach is at a 5. I think anyone that's at Kansas is at a 5 because you either win one game or you just get tired of losing. It's one of the two. And I think that they're in such a rush to get back to national relevancy that it's – I don't know who's going to take that. It's kind of the Lovie Smith deal. Who's going to want to take over that program? Like, mm-hmm. You're going to have to find someone within the program already that's willing to take it. And that was kind of my thing with Orgeron at LSU is it seems like in-house hires usually end up being worse because they stick to the same thing and
right.
It doesn't improve. That's just I don't know. There's I haven't gone through this whole list because there's obviously 100 and however many teams, but like Mark Stoops at Kentucky, he's at a 4. They've been so close to being good, and then they go 6-6. And I've lost bets with Kentucky, so I should probably stop betting on Kentucky. But but Scott Frost is good, so there we go.
Yeah, they got him at a 0. I think he'll be all right for the first few years here.
Yeah, I think he'll probably be at a 0 or a 1 for his entire career here. I don't know who's going to get their panties all in a wad about Scott Frost. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, though. Maybe he'll go 6-6 in year one and everyone will just burn Lincoln to the ground. We're not really sure, I guess. It's one end of the spectrum. Everything will be good or the town will be in smithereens. It's one of the two. So, as we continue with Hail Varsity Radio, we'll talk about the All-Star game that's coming up and our personal favorites. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Wind down hour one here, Hail Varsity Radio on a Friday. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. Coming up at the beginning of the next hour, we'll have Hail Varsity's Derek Peterson on with us, a Hail Varsity All-Stars, you could say. And coming up next week, the MLB takes a break from the season. You've got the Midsummer Classic, and that brings up the who has the best All-Star game. I think that always happens, and I used to say it was the MLB. And the reason I said it was the MLB is because it actually had something connected to it, that mm-hmm. If your league won, you got home field advantage in the World Series. Now, I can completely see why that's bogus.
Were you a fan of it, though? I was kind of a fan of it just because of the competitiveness.
Right.
Until your team gets screwed from it. Not that my team was ever in the running for getting screwed by that.
Until your team has 110 wins and they're the away team in game one, right? And I also, I was a fan that, like, it had some meaning to it. But at the same time, you get the year that they almost had the starting nine were all Royals players. And then you're like, okay, yeah, probably shouldn't make this worth something. But I've always thought it was one of those that the week itself, you get the Home Run Derby and then the All-Star Game, those combined, like, I think it's always been the best All-Star week, personally. And it also happens at a time where nothing's going on anyways. And I know that all of a sudden baseball stops too, but then you get the All-Star week. If the Pro Bowl was competitive, I mean, it's more football, but at the same time, they don't really play.
No, the Pro Bowl's absolutely garbage. That's not even in this conversation.
NBA, the All-Star week for the NBA, like the skills competitions and all that, like, I think they've started to go downhill, but like the dunk contest, three-point contest, that kind of stuff's fun. I personally think the NHL has been really good. They're doing like a three-on-three format, like playoff little deal, instead of like having a full game. And I think it'd be cool if the NBA did something like that, where they did basically a tournament of pickup basketball. But I think I honestly have to stick with, I think it's baseball. I think the MLB has the best All-Star game.
Okay, yeah, I think that, well, let me start with, I did like the competitive, like I said, which would get home field advantage. I think as a kid you like that more, but as an adult you realize, okay, that's kind of foolish. These guys aren't really, they don't want to try that hard. They just want to have fun out there. So it makes sense that they canceled that. I think for skills challenge wise, the NBA used to be better because they had more. The slam dunk contest was awesome. I think it was easier to watch for a lot more people because there's just, I hate to say, but there's just more fans of NBA than baseball. Like, I'm a true, like, you know, classic American baseball guy, and I love it. But I think the Home Run Derby now beats the NBA skills. But for All-Star Game, like the actual games, I'm taking the NBA over the MLB just because there's so many cool moves, cool dunks the NBA does, throwing it off the backboard, a lot more excitement than the game in the MLB.
I just, like, can't do the 185 to 181. Like,
I don't
games.
Mind it.
Like, I can't. It
just
makes it unwatchable.
Because people don't play defense. And that's,
well, they
the only
don't play
time you
defense
don't care
anyways.
About playing
they,
defense.
Yeah, they don't play defense during the season anyways. You know what the best All-Star game is MLS versus a big, like, national, like a team, like the MLS All-Stars versus like Bayern Munich. I'm not a big soccer guy, but I've always thought that was an interesting, like,
I didn't even know that was a thing,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, they play a foreign team. It's pretty sweet, but it's probably their fourth stringers because that's the MLS. But Derek Peterson, when we come back, hour two on the way, Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio on a Friday. Schmidt out of the office for Juniors Baseball. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. Now joining us, Hail Varsity's Derek Peterson at @DrPDHV. Had to think about it. Had to look it up to make sure I got the handle right. Derek, how are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. I think we're surviving so far. We've, you know, tried to come up with as much football news as we could, but kind of where I want to start is where we started the show off is we've been talking about Stanley getting to 1,000 and the opportunity that he has in this kind of an offense, but we started by looking at the Heisman odds that Caesars Entertainment came out with, and two Huskers were on that list, but they were J.D. Spielman and Adrian Martinez, no Stan. Kind of the reason I thought it was not alarming but interesting is the fact that this is an offense where there are so many options, so many receivers and running backs that have an ability to have an impact. Is it kind of weird that maybe J.D. Spielman would be on that list, or is it kind of nature of what this offense is?
I have not seen that list, so this is the first time hearing about it. But, yeah, that's very weird that J.D. would be the wide receiver and not Stanley. Not that J.D. is not talented. He's certainly on his own team in a different situation in a year or two, talented enough to be in that Heisman conversation. But this is an offense that we had a question about this in our mailbag on site on Wednesday. Just asking how many guys at Nebraska, how many receivers could realistically hit 500 yards? And I think two of them is probably what we're looking at this season, because Stanley is so good. I think whether he gets 1,000 yards or whether he doesn't get 1,000 yards, I think he'll be pretty close. I think he should get 1,000 yards. I think most people you talk to kind of see that as something that could probably happen. I mean, UCF had a 1,000-yard receiver last year. It's not like, you know, this offense spreads the ball around so much that you can't get big yardage guys. I think Stanley would be probably the guy, if you were talking Heisman odds, excuse me, for just this season, I would think Stanley would be the guy at the skill position that would be. That's just very strange that JD is has Heisman, even has Heisman odds.
Yeah.
That's strange to me. Kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I reacted to it too, is the fact that, like, not that he was on that list in his own mind. I kind of compared him to, you know, J.D. Spielman's kind of the DeMornay Pearsonell, I think, of this future offense. So could he fill into a role like that? Sure. But this early in the season, I think it's weird. But kind of like moving with that, I know you said it wouldn't be weird to see that Stan is dominant, but is it that there's so many options that it, like, I mean, you have the run game finally now. Will that play a bigger factor than we think when it comes to the pass game, like because of the quarterback run and the running back room now?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've talked about wanting to be a little bit more run heavy early on. I think whoever the quarterback ends up being to begin the season, I think that will factor into run pass splits and what kind of passing game we're going to see. I think we were talking about this in the office a couple days ago. If it's Tristan Jebbia that's the quarterback, you might see a little bit more aggressive vertical passing game. If it's Adrian Martinez as the quarterback, you might see more of a play-action pass passing game in a more, you know, you might be running more on standard downs, you might be running more on passing downs, you might be getting into the option territory, getting into where, you know, you're just peppering run after run to set up those play-action passes, as opposed to if Jebby is the guy, you're getting, you know, pass, run, pass, you know, that kind of balance. But I think the running game, if we're talking about players that have Heisman odds, the three that I would say would be most likely, the three that I could make the best case for would be whoever's going to be the quarterback. It would be Stanley Morgan at wide receiver. It'd be Greg Bell at running back. I was looking through numbers recently. I don't think Frost has had a 1,000-yard running back outside of Royce Freeman at Oregon. They definitely didn't have one last year at UCF. But if Bell, you know, they like to move the ball around basically in the backfield. But Bell's talented enough that I think he could get pretty close to 1,000 yards. He could get pretty close to being a guy that could start taking some. I mean, what we have in essence in this offense is you have a bunch of guys that are going to take numbers from a bunch of other guys because there's just so many mouths to feed in there. I mean, they've got depth. It's funny to sit here and be talking about this right now compared to where we were in December, where we were talking about, you know, what's the depth in the backfield? What's the depth at wide receiver in terms of scholarship bodies? And now we're at this point where we're like, well, you know, they might not have a 1,000-yard running back, and that might be okay because they've got depth behind it. Or, you know, they might not have three guys get 500 yards receiving, and that might be fine because, you know, there's plenty of options. I was talking about Tyjon, I think, in the same mailbag, and I wrote that Tyjon might be closer to 500 rushing and receiving yards than he is to just 500 receiving yards, just because of the nature of how they're going to try to spread the ball around and how they're going to try to get these guys into position.
Yeah, not a bad problem to have. Derek Peterson with us on Hail Varsity Radio at Dr. PDHV. And kind of sticking with odds here, Derek, Bovada released their Big Ten championship odds. And, of course, at the top, Ohio State 3-2, Wisconsin 14-5. I kind of want to get your take between these three teams. Who you think may have the best chance between Michigan at 11-2 odds, Penn State 6-1, and Michigan State at 10-1? I said with the value for the best value, I'd put my money on Michigan State. I think they get overlooked a little bit, and they had a pretty damn good year last year. So I would put my money on them. Who do you like out of those three teams?
I can't get myself to be too terribly sold on Michigan State. I like Michigan, which is funny because I keep saying that Michigan's the team that Nebraska could upset. If they upset one of those big three games on their schedule, that could be the team. But I like Michigan. I like Shea Patterson at quarterback. And I wrote for my for my Michigan preview on HailVarsity.com that, you know, if there's going to be a year where Jim Harbaugh is going to capture everything that they want him to capture at Michigan, and this is going to be the year. They've got a really, really good defense. Everybody that was really good a year ago is all young. They're all back. Led by Rashawn Gary, is going to be a terrible unit to have to play against. And then offensively, finally has his quarterback. So let's see what he can do with Shea Patterson at the helm. Let's see if that offense can be a top flight offense, or if maybe the issue isn't the quarterback and maybe it's the offensive system or the guy running it. We don't know that yet, but I think Michigan has all the pieces to make a run at Ohio State, because I think Penn State's probably going to feel the loss of Joe Moorhead a little bit, if not, you know, at any given point in the season, definitely early on as they're trying to adjust. You're absolutely going to feel the loss of Saquon Barkley. Trace McSorley's really, really good, but I want to see him without Saquon next to him before I anoint him the best quarterback in the country. And then, you know, like I said, with Michigan State, I'm just not too many, you know, peaks and valleys with them. I'm not sold on them entirely yet, so I'd probably pick Michigan out of that bunch. But it's Ohio State's to lose, if we're being honest.
Well, and continuing with that, if take Wisconsin out of the picture from the West, are you more sold on, you know, what Iowa did last year and what they're returning, or the potential of Northwestern to, like, blossom into something that – because we've seen a Northwestern team that's gotten really close to being good, and they have the talent to do so, but it seems like they kind of fumble it somewhere during the season. Like, if throw Wisconsin and Nebraska out of the West, is it Iowa or Northwestern that comes out of there?
You want me to pick between those two of them?
Yeah. I mean, if say Wisconsin's not winning the West, would it be – I mean, I think it's logically either Iowa or Northwestern. If I don't think Nebraska – they could get there – but I don't think year one, that's kind of where the expectation's at.
Yeah, you're not betting on Nebraska to make it there, even with Wisconsin out of the picture. I would probably pick Northwestern, which is, I mean, Northwestern goes as far as Clayton Thorson goes. I saw a mock draft that had Clayton Thorson as the number three overall pick in next year's NFL draft, which is just bonkers to me, the inconsistency there. But the defense for Northwestern is really good, and most of the key pieces of that defense are coming back. They were really good a season ago. They're going to go as far as Clayton Thorson gets them. Probably pick Northwestern, just because I think that there's not as many weaknesses or maybe question marks heading into the season as a team like Iowa.
Derek, I want to dive into the NBA now with you. I know we got into it the last time I was on. I was talking about Paul George and the Thunder, and then later the news broke about DeMarcus going to the Warriors. I know you're devastated like most of us, but I want to get your thoughts on the latest news surrounding Kawhi and DeMar DeRozan. So DeMar DeRozan wiped his Instagram clear. I didn't see it myself, but I think it was with all the Raptors pictures, or it might have been everything. I'm not exactly sure. And then Bovada listed the Raptors as the favorites to land Kawhi. They have them at even. What are your thoughts with that whole debacle?
I have not seen that, been paying attention to that. The Kawhi thing, if he goes to the Raptors, I mean, I don't know what that... I feel bad for Dwayne Casey and all this. Like, you know, you do everything you possibly can as a head coach to get your team over the hump, and then you get canned after. It's very clear that there was a psychological edge that LeBron had over that Raptors team, the players. And then LeBron leaves. I mean, if they get Kawhi, I'm seeing something from Sporting News that said Kawhi Leonard deal would be a complete disaster for the Spurs and Raptors. I mean, I don't know, it'd be pretty good for the Raptors, depending on what you have to give up. If you're giving up DeMar DeRozan, I don't know if I would rather give him or Kyle Lowry up in that bunch. But
I don't know if it's worth it because you don't know if Kawhi's staying past the 1 year, too.
If I was Kawhi, I mean, you've seen people talk about Philadelphia and Boston, and obviously he wants to go to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Why would I mean, what does Toronto have that neither of those three markets has? I just don't. You'd have him at flight risk. And one of the things that I think is so interesting with this Kawhi situation is nobody knows about the health. Nobody knows what he's going to look like when he comes back, short of maybe the Sixers know more than anybody else, because the doctor that he visited when he was in New York, the guy that he went to outside the Spurs organization, just happens to be the team doctor for the Philadelphia 76ers. So they could very well have more information than even the Spurs do. And even then, you're not seeing them throw the farm at Kawhi, which tells me nobody really knows what he's going to be like when he comes back. If he can come back as, you know, the third best player in the game, the best two-way player in the game, nobody knows that that's not a surefire possibility right now. So if you're Toronto coming out of left field, I mean, maybe they're emboldened by Oklahoma City coming and trading for Paul George and then convincing him to stay, but I don't know. I mean, depending on what you have to give up, this is a team that got swept in the Eastern Conference semifinals last season, and most people would assume that they're probably third behind Boston and Philadelphia heading into next year. I don't know that detonating your team and bringing in Kawhi, who might not be ready, who might not even play half the season, is the way to go if you're the Raptors.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked when I heard the news, too, and some other news that broke from your very own squad, the Thunder. Carmelo Anthony, not going to be joining them this next year. Are you devastated? Did you expect it? And where do you think he will go?
I expected it. I'm a little sad in the sense that I was one of the people pushing so hard for them to trade for Carmelo Anthony in the first place because I thought it would work. And so now that we're to the point where it clearly hasn't working, or clearly hasn't worked, can't speak English today. It clearly hasn't worked, and people are talking about moving on. I'm sad from my own ego being completely wrong on that situation. It's not shocking.
Not at all.
I just hope no, not at all. And everybody points to the tax bill. Everybody points to the 310 or 15 or whatever the figure is, payroll plus tax that the Thunder could be spending this season with Carmelo Anthony on the team, and I honestly don't know this as a fact, but I honestly don't think it's as big of an issue to the Thunder organization as some people would lead you to believe it is. They were preparing for this day since they drafted James Harden. I mean, this has always been. Now, they probably weren't prepared for the faces that are on the team when they're paying this bill, but they were prepared to pay this bill. There's a lot of oil money in Oklahoma, so they were ready for this. I don't think it's as big of an issue as people are thinking. They're not going to blow up the team to avoid the tax. But if you can, they're trying to move Melo, which is what I would prefer, get something out of him instead of just stretching him, waving him, and then watching him go walk into the Houston Rockets on a minimum while you're still paying him and potentially have him on a team that beats you in the postseason next year. That would be worst case scenario for me. I think ideally you would have wanted to trade him to a team like the Atlanta Hawks or the Brooklyn Nets, who have the space to absorb his salary. But, I mean, you saw with the Jeremy Lin deal that Atlanta and Brooklyn just pulled off, and you saw with the Kenneth Faried deal that Denver did with Brooklyn, those types of deals are, A, requiring draft picks for the team to dump salary, and, B, I mean, they're filling up cap space, so there's not a lot of teams left. I've seen the Chicago Bulls with Cristiano Felicio rumored. That doesn't move the needle for me. It doesn't do anything from a salary standpoint because you just have another front court player that's making, you know, $8 million a year next season. So I would much rather they traded him than just give him up for nothing. But Woj tweeting out that they're hell-bent on him not being on the team doesn't give them a whole lot of leverage.
Derek Peterson with us, Hale Varsity Radio at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. Thanks, Derek. We'll catch up with you next time, and thanks for talking to us today.
Sounds good, bud. Thanks for having me.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Big shout out to Derek Peterson for joining us. And you can find that interview. We will have that posted up to ESPN1480.com. And once we figure out how we're going to do the segments and the clips, the best of the highlights, we will get that uploaded to Twitter. In about 15 minutes, we'll have our rewind of Searles versus Butch Cotton, the pool incident, the E. Hollywood true story of when the program was here during the Pelini era. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke at Two Birds, One Stone on Twitter and at Danny Burke. Five, room for you, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House, let's do that. So, Danny, I found this on the Coronation SB Nation, the Nebraska fan page, essentially, right? And the question was, what was worse, the 2007 season and the 2017 season? Which one was worse? And I know that you can't speak too much to the 07. I know you'd probably love to. It was such a fantastic year, as you can probably tell. But 5-7 that year, 4-8 last year. Actually, some pretty fair similarities, because when Callahan came in and switched it to a West Coast offense, it was kind of like, you know, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, and Riley changed it to a pro-style passing offense, and both of them were kind of – both of them weren't bad at recruiting. Bill Callahan is, I mean, the reason Ndamukong Suh came to Nebraska, right? But it just never worked. It just never worked out. But, you know, I pulled up that 2007 year, and they lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 – they lost 5 games in a row. And one of them was to Kansas, who for some reason was good that year. They lost 76-39, and I think that was the moment where everyone's like, okay, yep, this thing's done. Close the book. I mean, they lost at Missouri 41-6, 45-14 against Oklahoma State. Like, that, the season itself was a train wreck. Now, that's not to say last year was any better, though. You know, you look at all the teams that got to score 50-plus against Nebraska, and it just – you just replays, and it's like, man, what went wrong? But one of the losses that Nebraska had in 2007 was number one USC. I went to that game. It was the last time College Game Day, I think. It was the last time College Game Day was on site at Memorial Stadium for a Nebraska game. And so everyone's like hyped about it. Nebraska's ranked. It's going to be awesome. And then USC just... I mean, it was only 49-31, but it was a whooping that no one needed to see live. And I was, 2007? I would have been 10. Yeah, not a good game to go to. It was not fun. But, you know, got to see Lee Corso from like a 20-foot distance. That was pretty cool. So, I don't know. You were here for last season, so it was bad. I think we can agree with that, right?
Not fun.
As a Husker fan, I'd like to say, or as being raised a Husker fan, I'd love to say that, you know, this 2007 was worse. But you then look at I think what values whether it was bad or not is what the following year happens. So I think if this year, for example, if, you know, Frost and company go 7-5, that means the talent he was left with wasn't bad. It's just the mentality was a 4-8 mentality, right? And I think what happened was kind of similar in 2007. They did run into teams that normally weren't good and all of a sudden had phenomenal seasons in 2007. But on top of that, you look at the next year, they go 9-4 and win the Gator Bowl against Clemson under Bo Pelini. So that means whatever was left over was not a 5-7 football team. It was a 5-7 mentality that just got absolutely run over, over and over and over again. And I think that's very similar to what happened last year. And I have to say last year was worse, just because you look at who they lost to and how they lost. I mean, who would have expected? You can expect that Ohio State won. I think that's fair, right? Like, you expect Ohio State to put hang 56 on you. But at the same time, to let Iowa, to let Minnesota, to get beat by Northern Illinois, I mean, the list just goes. At least Nebraska was losing to number 1, number 17, 16, number 8. Like, they lost to people that are teams that they probably should have. So I think that the way to evaluate this is not what happened in that individual season. I think it's what happens the following year under a new coach. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a unique way to look at it. I think from what you said, from 2007, a lot of those losses were kind of landslides. I think last year, Nebraska discarding Ohio State was pretty much in those games that they lost, besides Iowa too, I guess. But I think there was a little, well, I guess it's hard for me to say because, like you said, I wasn't around for 07. But just being here, I think after, even after that first game for Nebraska, barely beating Arkansas State, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, yikes, is this how it's going to go? And yeah. Then there was just really no, I don't want to say enthusiasm, but confidence for the rest of the season. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And then Wisconsin, you saw a little glimmer of hope. You're in that game. It could be a big upset that it kind of fell down at the end. Ohio State, you knew they were just going to come whoop you, and they did, absolutely. Iowa, you're like, okay, it's our rivals. Maybe we can just get in this game, send Mike Riley off with something at least. You know, he's a nice guy. Just gets obliterated.
Yeah.
I think that just capped it off perfectly. It was like, let's cut everything off, complete rebuild. It's not a complete rebuild, of course, because it's college, right. But I think I would still say, assuming that I was here for 07, I would still pick 2017 as a worse year alongside with your pick.
So, and I agree. I think that's just, I think what makes it worse for 2007 and not 2017 is how hard the Huskers fell from the top.
I mean, I think because right away, well, I think with 07, it was an initial shock of being so bad, but 17, it was like, it might be worse because it's like, we're doing it again. We're not learning from it. Like, yeah. That's what made it so much worse too.
Right. And the thing too with 07, so they enter the season as number 19 and rattle off two wins. They get a win at Wake Forest. So it's like, okay, now you've got to play number 1. You're probably going to lose to USC at home. That's fine. Whatever. And then they beat Ball State. They beat Iowa State. So they're 4-1 to open the season and finish 5-7. And I think that's very comparable when people are saying, well, if Nebraska starts 3-0 this year, are you okay with 6-6? Well, that means you're going to go 3-6 in your last 9 games. They went 4-1 in the first 5, and they went 1-6 in the last 7. I mean, I think that was the biggest thing, too. Like you're saying, they didn't learn anything. I think the reason 4-8, and I think the reason you can compare these two, but the reason 4-8 especially is, when they lost, it just kept happening.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't learn anything from it. And it was like one after the other. And it was like there was no sense of, hey, we should probably fix this. We should probably do something different. And it was the way they finished. It's just, I mean, you finish 1-6. I don't remember how that, because they beat Purdue and then didn't win a game after that, right? I think is how it went. They like lost straight Minnesota. Minnesota, there was someone between them and Iowa, I thought. But in any case, you
Penn
know,
State, the, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I think it was Minnesota, Penn State, Iowa was your last three. I think you beat Purdue and then you lose your last three. So, you know, that's part of it too, is how do you finish the season? And, you know, it's worse if you start 4-1, but it's also bad if you start 1-2 and then only win 3 more games. So I think like, I think that's the reason you can compare these two seasons. They were both really bad in their own sense, but one of them was, you know, landslide losses against good teams, and the other one was teams that you're watching and you're going, what the hell is going on? And I think that, you know, getting beat by Iowa was not a big deal. Getting beat by Ohio State, not a big deal. It's how they lost. They just kind of, like, sat there and went, yep. It's going to be bad.
Well, you mentioned they started out the 2017 4-1 Nebraska in 2017. They did not win those beginning games, non-conference games that you're supposed to win.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I mean. Yeah, they went 1-2 to start the season. They should have been at least 2-1 to start the year. Mm-hmm. I get the Oregon loss, but even then, they shouldn't have let Oregon run all over them the way they did, because, granted, Do I think the Ducks kind of toned it down in the second half? Yeah. But at the same time, when they did that, and then Nebraska was catching momentum, I was talking about with someone else, if all of a sudden Nebraska ties it 42-all, then Oregon has to go, like, try to find their rhythm again. They took themselves so far out of their offensive game that if Nebraska would have put them on their heels, who knows what would have happened.
Let me ask you this. How different do you think the season would have been if the Huskers beat the Ducks? Do you think they get a lot more confidence and they beat NIU? Or do you think they're still kind of content rolling in there?
I think if they beat Oregon, are we saying that they make the comeback against Oregon?
Yes.
If they make that comeback against Oregon, I think they beat NIU. Now, do I think the season goes that much more different? Maybe they get to 6 wins.
Maybe it's a closer game against Wisconsin all the way through.
Yeah.
And maybe you'd assume you'd beat Northwestern. Minnesota, you don't get pummeled by, you hope, because you still have the confidence riding.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is they all add up, right? And the same with this. You get one bad loss, you're like, okay. And you get another one.
At least we're playing NIU next week. You know, we can
get that. I think what happened was they lost Oregon and go, are we really this bad? And then when they started to lose to NIU, it's like, are we really this bad?
I don't know if it was more, are we really this bad with the Oregon game? I think they saw the comeback. The first half, they're like, all right, we're sucking. They come back, they say, okay, we have some fight in us. And then they're like, okay, we got NIU next week. That's for sure when we'll get back on track here. They kind of just were lackadaisical with
it. Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, what are we doing here? And then everything just fell and fell and fell and kept getting worse.
I think you're right, though. I think if they do start the season 2-1, or if they start at 3-0, I think if they start that season 3-0, they still don't get more than 6 or 7 wins just based on, like, how those games happened. Like, I have a hard time putting myself in a position where I think they win 7 of those games, because Penn State was really good. Ohio State was really good. Wisconsin may have been more competitive, but I think they would have eventually figured out that, hey, let's just run it 35 times and it'll work. But I don't think they lose to Northwestern in overtime. I don't think Purdue's as close as it was. I think some of those games that were close or losses, like close losses, aren't as bad, but I still think they win more than 6 or 7,
yeah,
even if they beat Oregon.
Agree.
So coming up, we've got our rewind with Searles and Butch Cotton, the E! Hollywood true story of what happened in the pool when the program visited the Pelini era, as Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
All right, Jeremiah Searles, kind enough to stay with us. Jake Cotton has phoned in on the bat line. Searles, do you have us?
Oh, yeah, I got you guys.
Butch, are you still with us?
I'm with us. I might need to go see Deb the spa lady here after this. I just found out what we're talking about.
So you heard secondhand from somebody that you're getting crushed on my show. You know I love you, so I'd never do that. And I was just asking about military training. Searles, you're here. Butch, tell us what happened in the pool. Don't get me fired.
So, I got a text from about a 5'5 bald guy down in Lincoln and said, you need to call in. You're getting crushed. So, this, I don't know. I'll let Searles take it, and I'll fill it.
All right, Butch, you know exactly what happened. I'm sitting here, Spencer Long's here with me in the hotel room, and I walk in and I go, Spencer, me and Butch about to have it on the radio. And he goes, why? I go, I'm telling the story of Butch in the pool. And Spencer's doing this reaction. I'm trying hard.
I thought this was done. I thought it was buried. I thought we were moving past this.
Dude, this is never done. I saw those guys on Monday at the facility, and I saw them. I was like, oh, pool tomorrow? They're like, yeah, pool tomorrow. I was like, oh, you guys remember the pool? They're like, oh, yeah, we remember Jake in the pool.
And I'm a pool guy, too. I oh, man. All right, continue. Go. Keep it going.
The best part, Butch, like I said before, is they get you out of the pool. You're standing there with your hands on your hips, really upset, and he goes, Jake, you good swimmer? And you respond, decent. You were on the swim and dive team in high school.
He looked at one of the running backs. I won't say who. And he goes, so-and-so, can you swim? And he goes, no. And he goes, Jake, are you a decent swimmer? Are you a decent swimmer? Really? He can't swim? Hey, you're a decent swimmer. Oh, you're working hard. You're cool. Oh, my God, man. I've never been more undressed, stripped down. Just, I was left. My skeleton was standing there. My flesh, my skin, it was
it's a memory I'll never forget. It's ingrained in my brain for the rest of my life. It's what's my
I had repressed it until about last spring when Stirrup brought it up, and I thought it was done.
We're talking about the pool incident during the program training between Searles and Jake Cotton here on Hail Varsity. Butch, who kept screwing? Who kept screwing up? Say hi to Spencer too. Who kept screwing up in the pool?
Running backs.
Well, who? You had like 30 of them.
It
was a collective effort in the backfield, and I mean, good Lord, it was something. Oh my God!
Were they doing it on purpose, or were they just awful at water sports?
They just water sports.
I don't mean it that way, Butch.
The greatest part was Spencer. So Spencer was hurt at the time. So Spencer had a front row seat. He was like, he'd walk around and be like, come on, guys, try hard. Because they yelled at him because he wasn't, like, encouraging us enough. And so he'd walk over to me and Jake and be like, hey, come on, guys, keep working. And we just look at him as we're drowning in the pool with our sweatshirts above our head. He's like, come on, guys, try harder.
I learned a lot. I was a young, impressionable guy. I was out there with Justin Jackson, who was just a warrior, and he's fighting, and then he splashed first. Mm-hmm. I was not the first splasher. He splashed. He yelled a couple expletives, and then you know how they say they always get the second guy?
Yeah, like, right. Yeah.
That's me. I took the bullet for my senior leader, so I think if anything, I'm the good teammate here. The program teaches how to be a good teammate. Mm-hmm. I think I was showing everybody else in the pool how to be a good teammate, and that's my story.
So you didn't rat anybody out, but you did splash.
Correct. Yeah, I wasn't gonna sell out my teammate in the pool with me.
You just did now, so. But it's yours. It's water under the bridge. So
yeah, it was my tell-all.
So you know how, like, the first person like always throws the little punch, and then the second person's like the big overreactor,
right?
Yeah. So Justin like splashed it, like, damn it, and then you got Jake just like, ah! And like the wave washed over everyone on the sideline. Barney's kicking the water off his shoes.
Oh man.
What'd Barnes say about this one, Jake?
This one was an unspoken. He knew, I knew. He was proud of me for being a good teammate, but not the way to do it.
What about Bo?
I don't think there was nothing left of me to be yelled at, and rightfully so. I'm not Eric Kapitulik in the program. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just absolutely incredible. They come in. They beat you up, and they undress you, and, I mean, I'm still undressed. I'm walking around Omaha right now getting ready to go to yoga, still naked from this incident 5 years ago.
Butch Cotton is with us. Jeremiah Searles, Spencer Long in a hotel just shaking, probably.
I will say this. So Taylor was the one leading the deal.
Did that freak you out?
No, but he's doing it. And we do it one time, the first time, and Eric Kapitulik goes, Taylor, is that the best you guys can do? Taylor looks around. Yeah, I think so. can we go get breakfast? So,
Taylor Martinez, that's funny.
One round through, bunch of mess ups. Like, we had to do like a lap down the pool. Everyone had to go. Everyone had to get out of the pool. Then everyone had to go back down the pool, and you're supposed to do it as fast as you could. Literally one time. We ran through it one single time. Taylor, is that the fastest these guys can do it? Yeah, it's pretty good.
I have girls, freshman lacrosse teams doing this faster than you. And you're telling me that's the fastest you can do it? Yep. I think so.
Yep.
are we good here?
Dude, it was
fun, boys. I got to run.
Butch, you're awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for making me deal with this.
Yeah, Butch, you're awesome. Steak and a beer next time. All right, brother. See you, bud. Searles, you be good, man. That was fun. Thank you.
Hey, always a good time. But like, all seriousness, the program is something that is something like we're still talking about as teammates. And like Spencer and them did it up in the Jets. They did it with the NFL. They do it a little differently up there. But
okay.
It is something that you'll always remember as teammates, and it really brings you closer together as a team. I'm glad that they did it because it really brings a different dynamic to a team after you do it.
That was good. That was a good visual, and Butch, yeah.
I'm trying hard.
Stayed on the line. Searles, we'll get caught up, brother. Thanks for the time, man.
Absolutely, man. Don't forget TysonsTreasureChest.org. We only got like 2 or 3 teams left, so sign up.
Do it. Get golfing with Searles, TysonsTreasureChest.org. Good stuff from Searles. Get Deb on the horn. Tell her we're sorry. We'll get Deb the spa lady locked in here. Home Innovation Spas. Butch is going to go get a spa from Deb because he needs one after that. That was a true Hollywood story. I thought he was going to lose it. I mean, he did lose it, but I thought he was going to, like, I don't know, see if our delay worked, lose it. That was gold. All right. So there's an inside look at the program from Searles, from Jay Cotton, who apparently splashed people, and it works.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Winding down a Friday here on Hail Varsity Radio, Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Danny Burke 5. No Schmidt as he's at Juniors Baseball today and tomorrow. So tomorrow morning will be a Mark Crean at Colton Stone special. I'm not going to make Danny get out of bed at 6 in the morning. I know you just got back from vacations. That's probably the last thing you want to do. Finally want to catch up on your sleep, I'm sure. But Danny, we it's a mournful time because right now would be when NCAA football would be coming out. It's the 5th year in a row where there is not an NCAA football because it got canned. But of course that doesn't stop people from saying, well, hey, what if we made one, right? What would Nebraska be? What would all the schools be? And, you know, you have your, like, 95 overalls in Alabama and Clemson, and Ohio State was, like, a 94. But they had Nebraska slated as a 78. And at first I was outraged, and you kind of probably calmed me down, talked me off the ledge a little bit about, you know, Nebraska being a 78. But it boosted their offense to an 84. So I want to get your take on, you know, why it's a rational 78. I think it's about right now that I really like calmed myself down and thought about it. But I mean, you got to think coming off of 4-8, the only reason they're probably at even 78 is because Scott Frost is the coach.
Exactly. Name one other team or video game, I guess, relating both together. Name another instance where a team has gotten a head coach and you've thought they've deserved a higher rating. You know, you don't look at that typically for video games because of a new coach. It's because of the players. Now, of course, it's different because of college.
Yeah.
But the players that are coming in new, let's say disregard Adrian Martinez, Greg Bell, you know, they're not going to be extremely impactful as if it were a professional team that would boost those ratings that much. Not saying right. That they won't. But I think 78 is appropriate coming off of 4-8 season. You can't expect it to be higher than that. I think that's pretty good.
Give me 99.
Honestly. Yeah, I think it's pretty good. That's a C-plus right there. Nebraska's looking to be an average team in all the odds and rankings, and that's a pretty above-average ranking. So, and I think it'll go up as the season progresses. And 84 for offense, that you can be happy about.
Yeah, and I think the reason we can consider this as relevant is because you can directly translate it to actual gameplay, right? Because last year, would you have said they were more than like a, you know, on a scale of 100, were they more than like a 70 overall? Probably not. But as they progress and get better, you would expect them to get into a threshold where they'll sit higher than a majority of the Big Ten schools. They'll sit higher than the mid-tier SEC if everything goes according to plan, right? And I think you're right. You know, how many teams are, you know, flip of a switch, all of a sudden they're better because they hired someone else? Usually it's the other way around. Oh, they hired someone else, so their rating's going to drop. Or, you know, they lost their starting quarterback, so that's going to drop. Right. So, and I get that's kind of like how they do the rankings, like AP and all that, but I think 78's about right. I think they're going to be average or a little above.
Right, and yeah, you were freaking out a little bit at first. You're like, really? I was like, well, think about it. I mean, they were so bad last season. I think that's pretty generous, if any. I think the right score, but compared to if it really happened, if you compare it to any other teams that got new coaches, I don't know what the ratings are, but I assume probably weren't as high from last season to this season.
Probably not, but 78 is probably fine.
Yeah.
So, well, big shout-out again to Derek Peterson. Thank you, Danny, my esteemed producer for the day. Catch us tomorrow morning, weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Mark Kranak and myself. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next time.